Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, going to talk about the wonderful world of science and the importance of science education with our good friend Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison, president of the American Chemical Society as well, which is a big honor. It's one of the largest, maybe the first or second largest professional society in the world. And so great to have him back. Thanks for listening. Are you a science fan? Where did your love of science come from? Do you have questions about science? Maybe you pursued it as a hobby or a profession. What inspired you? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show and you can do that. And Bassam, welcome. 55 years ago this week. Big day for you.
Very big day for me. Yesterday, September 17, marked the 55th anniversary of my family's arrival in the United States from our native Lebanon. It's been a wonderful experience for all of us. My family and I are very grateful for the wonderful hospitality and the great opportunities that are available in our country. And I have to tell you, Larry, that a lot of things have happened in the past 50-plus years, not only to me, but to our society. And maybe we'll get a chance to talk about them. But one more personal observation. I always remember the day I was sworn in as a U.S. citizen here in Madison, Wisconsin, with Judge Doyle, the late Judge Doyle, swore me in along with other people. And he said many things, but the most memorable thing he said, and I use this frequently, he said, enjoy your freedoms. Enjoy your freedoms. We live in the most free society in the history of humankind. And with that freedom comes great responsibility, Larry, and for all of us. So thank you for remembering my anniversary. It's been an emotional weekend for me, and I want to again express my deep gratitude to the United States. You know, every time I travel abroad, which is very often, and I then return to the United States, I go down on my knees and give thanks for being in the United States, for being a U.S. citizen.
Probably incalculable significant contributions from your side, so from you, Bassam. So,
well, you know what, Larry? So have you. Just recently, you were honored as one of the 40 award, right? I want to get this right.
40 and 40.
This is a significant recognition of your work in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. So what are you excited about this?
It was quite an honor, and I was, you know, it's 40 people that were picked as having a significant impact on Wisconsin and Wisconsin agriculture over the last 40 years. So they picked 40, one per year, and I was one, and I was looking at who was, I was in some pretty good company, and I was wondering whether or not I really belonged in with that.
You certainly belong there. You're in very good company, and you make good company for the others, Larry. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, and we have callers online who want to talk with you. You know, Herb in Plainfield, let's go there. Herb, hi, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call.
Hi, good morning. I just want to say that, I'm 62 years old, and so I'm like a child of Sputnik and all of that, but the guy I remember from TV as a young guy, his name was Don Herbert, or Mr. Wizard.
Yep.
And he kind of instilled in me, I think, my lifelong love of science. So if you remember Don Herbert, he was a real interesting character.
Absolutely.
I knew Don Herbert.
Oh, really?
Knew Mr. Wizard. You know, he was from La Crosse, Wisconsin.
I did not know that.
Yes, and he died just a few years ago. I dedicated one of my chemical demonstration books to Don Herbert, Mr. Wizard. I learned a lot from Mr. Wizard. I learned about the importance of being communicative about science, the excitement of doing science experiments, the joy of doing these experiments, and how we wonder about the physical world that we live in. He was just a great mentor to me, and that's why I dedicated one of my volumes to him. And he and his wife, Norma, were very good friends. And so I thank you for remembering that. And also thank you for remembering Sputnik, because Sputnik was launched in early October, just a few short weeks after we arrived in the United States.
Oh!
In early October 1957. And Sputnik changed our attitude toward science. In America, changed our attitude toward science education. Sputnik was a call for action to make sure that we in the United States appreciate the value of scientific and technological advancement. Of course, you know, we took it as a challenge. We didn't want the Soviet Union to beat us in the space race. It was a rallying point. It resulted in a great deal of very thoughtful federal programs aimed at recruiting young people to go into science, to go into science teaching. And you know what, Larry? We need something like that now. We don't need a Sputnik challenge. We're up to the task. We can do a lot better than what we're doing in our schools across the land. We have many pockets of excellence around the country in our school systems. Our colleges and universities are the envy of the world, but we can't sit on our laurels. We have to be constructive in our thinking. We have to be careful in planning what we must do to successfully live and enjoy in the 21st century, and that's a huge challenge for us.
Yeah, very, very huge challenge. I'm going to give John in Chippewa Falls a chance to join in. John, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, when I was a kid, I was interested in chemistry at a pretty young age, and I found this book. I don't know if it's still available, because there was some really strange stuff you could make with this book. Everything from candy to oxygen, to hydrogen balloons, chlorine, you know, stuff that you wouldn't want kids being able to do, but you know, it really piqued my interest, and I think it had a big effect on my life. I was just wondering if the book's still available, or you want children to be learning how to do that kind of stuff.
There are many books, John, that are available. In fact, I have a short list of them on my website. If you go to my website, scifun.org, scifun.org, and we have a set of recommended books. I also have a set of recommended websites that are reliable sources of information. But I also have in the upper left corner on scifun.org, if you click there, you can download experiments you can do at home. That is the best thing we can do with our families, with our friends, with our neighbors. Download them. They're safe. They're home experiments. They are just wonderful, and they tend to inspire us. Well, you know, I'll let you try them out, and you tell me what they do for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, John, for calling. Appreciate it. Talking science and science education today with Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. Thanks for listening in. Question or comment for him about science? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Bassam, you wanted to add something in.
Larry, coming up next week is the very exciting Wisconsin Science Festival.
Ah, yes.
This is an annual event that started last year and is being held this year here in Madison, and there are many activities across the state. And people are invited to all the events. They're free. It goes on for 3 days. Free events. And the best source of information is to go to the web at www.wisconsinsciencefest.org. Wisconsinsciencefest.org. There are enormous number of offerings in Madison and actually in many other locations around the state. I am humbled to tell you this is an idea I had, and I published this in the Wisconsin Academy magazine in 2009. It took a couple of years to get it going, but I'm so pleased that we are having the Wisconsin Science Festival for kids of all ages. Free events in Madison and for 3 days. And I myself, along with some colleagues, will be doing a Science is Fun extravaganza as part of the Science Festival.
Oh.
Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. Saturday morning at 8. I mean at 10 in the chemistry building. It's free. You can just walk in. You don't need any tickets. You just walk in. We look forward to increasing participation on the part of our communities, especially in the greater Dane County area, but elsewhere around the state, in enjoying hands-on activities, minds-on activities, in participating in great learning experiences. There are guests coming from overseas to be speakers. Our own Sean Carroll is one of the speakers. You just go to the website and get all this information. It is, again, at wisconsinsciencefest.org.
And I should mention that Wisconsin Public Radio, and Judith's reminding me of this, we're co-sponsors, including the live radio drama of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Wonderful.
It'll be fun.
It'll be lots of fun.
Oh, man. And we'll put a link up for the festival on my Facebook page, too. So people, if you didn't get the link, just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'll give you a link to that WisconsinScienceFest.org. Jeff in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I have a question, a science question, a water chemistry question for the guest.
Okay.
Where does the oxygenation occur in a fish tank? Does it occur at the surface of the water? Is that where most of the oxygen gets into the water, or does it occur in the bubbles underneath that come up from the bottom?
Well, both places, because the exposure at the surface is to air that's standing still, but the bubbles stir up, and that increases the oxygenation that takes place. And of course, the fish are swimming around and also stirring things up. Did you have something in mind, Jeff, when you're asking this? Did you make some observations that you...
I've always heard that most of the oxygenation occurs at the top of the water, where the water meets the air, and that the bubbles at the bottom of the tank circulate the water. So you're taking the top part that's most oxygenated, bringing it to the bottom, and then you bring the bottom part up to the top to pick up more oxygen.
Well, that's where the largest surface area of the water exposure is. That's correct. But the bubbles themselves are air bubbles, and you know that 21% of the air is oxygen, so that contributes
significantly
as well.
Yep, there you go. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Nick in Chilton, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi there, first-time caller. Great program. I wanted to ask your guest if he ever had the chance to meet any other like famous scientists in other fields, like Carl Sagan or Richard Feynman, I believe is his last name, and if he'd got to talk to them and what these people were like. Sometimes when I'm having a bad day, I'll go online and watch clips of these men to get inspiration. I teach economics, not chemistry, but I enjoy listening to those fields. So just curious if you got to meet other people like that and what they were like.
Thank you, Nick. Both Carl Sagan and Richard Feynman, great inspirational figures in science and in communicating science. I knew Carl Sagan very well. He was a colleague of my brother-in-law, Frank Drake. Frank Drake is the father of SETI, S-E-T-I, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Yeah.
And and they collaborated on many projects, including the launch of Voyager, which is now way now at the edge of the solar system, with recordings of sounds of Earth. They called it murmurs of Earth. Yes, Carl and I appeared several times in Washington D.C. and elsewhere, advocating for science literacy. Of course, he's a charismatic figure. And Richard Feynman and his writings and his the interviews that he did and the life that he did, very inspirational. But you know, both Sagan and Feynman had big egos. So that's fine. And they were able to use their presence to really reach wide audiences. Among the general population that normally would not be reached by scientists, so they are heroes of mine, and we have currently people on in the media popularizing science. There are many avenues that we have, not only through the web, but of course on the radio and on television. And Larry, I really want to compliment you for the excellent science programs that you have on your show here.
No, thank you.
You have many outstanding guests from all areas of science, and that is another good example. So of the importance of communicating science. So. Yes, I knew both Sagan in person and Feynman through his writings.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, Talking Science and Science Education with Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Science and science education on our minds as we visit with Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, also president of the American Chemical Society. And we have an email from Sinead who says, I am a grandmother of a 5-, 4-, and 3-year-olds and feel somewhat responsible for instilling in them a love of science. I'm fascinated with it. What's the best way to start this process? I'm not sure if school always does this. I think she'd like to get a jump start on it a little bit.
Excellent, excellent question, and I applaud your interest in cultivating additional curiosities that youngsters have at all ages. Read to them. Read. Not only about science, just read. Reading is very important. Listen to music with them. Also, take them on nature hikes. Just walk around. Look around.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, today when you walked in here, did you notice something happening to the leaves on the trees?
Yeah, huh? Starting to turn.
The kids of all ages ask questions. Why do the leaves change color in the fall? We'll get back to that in a moment. I want to get back to that in a moment. But to answer her question, be engaging. Surround your family with the beauty of asking questions and recognizing that expecting instantaneous responses to the questions is unrealistic. Just ask, you know, one of the most difficult things we do in science is to learn how to formulate the question. But for youngsters, let them ask questions and be encouraging to them. Also work with the teachers in the school. Even though they're not in school yet, visit with the teachers, see what they have to offer, what they recommend before the 3-year-old and the 4-year-old and the 5-year-old get to school. That will also serve notice on the school teachers that they should be paying more mm-hmm. attention to this. It's a cooperative thing between the family, the school system. It's a cooperative attitude that we need to nurture in our communities to allow curiosity to be the driving force of what we do. Later on, as we mature and go into science and become scientists, mathematicians, engineers, technologists, then our curiosity it not only increases, but will also be helpful to us in finding applications to the answers that we find through mm-hmm. this curiosity.
Yeah.
So nurturing curiosity is the most important aspect of interacting with family members. Be encouraging, be patient, be firm, and of course, be loving.
Mm. Good tips. And there are some, I think, experiments on your page?
Yes.
SciFund.org?
Oh, yes, SciFund.org. If in doubt, go to SciFund.org. And if you don't find something that you'd like us to have there, you let us know at the bottom of the page. There is an email address you can tell us. We answer all questions, usually fairly quickly, except one type of questions we don't answer. We don't answer homework problems for students, okay?
Okay. Paul in Galesville, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. This is Paul Kinzer. I've been on your show a few times.
Oh, hi, Paul.
To talk about astronomy.
Yeah.
And when you introduced this topic, I just wanted to call and reiterate what has already been said about your show. I love coming on your show because you make people feel welcome to call in with any question they might have, and people do. People call in and they ask just excellent and amazing questions and questions at all different levels. And I work with kids every day, so I want to kind of ride on what was just said too. Kids are curious, and to nurture that curiosity, it isn't even difficult because almost everywhere you look, there's a science question. And my other thought would be, do things, not just talk about things. That's important, but also do things. I'm sure that website has lots of cool things to do. Look up, look down, look around, and ask questions.
Oh,
ask
thank
questions.
You, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. Ask questions, and also learn from the questions that are being asked.
Yeah.
I constantly learn from questions that I get. You know, I think I know a little bit about a few things, and then I get a question, and it makes me pause and think,
yeah.
Okay, and I learn. I mean, that's the joy of learning. And it's not only applicable to science. It's just the fullness of the joy of learning and improving our ability as human beings to understand the wonderful, beautiful world that we live in, its complexities, and how we can be participants in protecting it from harm that can happen, as is happening right now, in part because of the Industrial Revolution, Larry and Paul. The Industrial Revolution has advanced our state of living to what it is right now. It's wonderful, but it has come with also additional consequences that through science we are now aware of, including effect on the climate and effect on the environment. So, yes, ask questions, participate in the process, enjoy the fullness of
yep.
being alive.
Yep.
Yeah.
Paul, thank you so much. I really
sure.
appreciate it.
Sure.
Take care. Paul Kinzer does a wonderful job and spends a lot of his time. He works with children about the stars, and he's got a planetarium that he can take with him and kind of a tent-like thing that he blows up and students can go inside and he has it set up so they can look at the night sky, even in the day.
Wonderful. Thank you, Paul, for doing that.
Pete in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Bassam.
Hi.
I really appreciate the work that Bassam does as far as sharing his science with the community.
Mm-hmm.
But I need more of this. I need Bassam to share this information with the medical community because I see so many examples where the medical community seems to pay no attention to what the science community is doing. Recently having to do with someone who was diagnosed with an ulcer, and the doctor was apparently completely unaware that 5 years ago the Nobel Prize was given to a researcher who showed that ulcers were caused by bacteria. And this doctor was still on the diagnosis and care that was prescribed 20 years ago. And I'm thinking, how can these people in medicine be unaware of what science is doing? And I, many, many examples of this. So that's kind of what I think we need to move ahead on, is sharing this this information with the medical community, because they need to be updated just as well as those of us in the public. So how do we do that?
Excellent question, Pete. And when I speak of science, I'm talking about all sciences, including the medical sciences. And, you know, the truth is scientists, technologists, physicians are very, very good at communicating with each other. But we are not as good yet in communicating with the rest of the population.
Mm-hmm.
It is an awesome responsibility that we have. We should aim to improve the level of science literacy in our local community. That's an awesome responsibility that we have. It is part of the joy of being knowledgeable, is to share what you know with others, because, as Pete is just saying, it can have immediate practical applications. Not always, but it can have that. So we have to learn how to communicate with each other effectively. It's not that I'm from UW-Madison, I'm here to help you. You know, it's not that. It's not that attitude or the more famous slogan, I'm from Washington, I'm here to help you. It's not that. It's that I am part of this community. I belong to this community. I have gained some knowledge, and I'd like to share it. And in the process of sharing it, as I've been saying already, I'll learn even more.
And Pete, thank you again for calling. I appreciate your call very much. You have lots of callers online. I want to give some more a chance to be in. Judy in Grand Marsh up next. Hi, Judy. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I just would like to praise the doctor for his wonderful personality and the caring that he has so overwhelmingly exhibited about how he cares as much about people as he does for science. I am awarding him today the Dr. Oliver Sacks Award for being that type of person. Dr. Sacks, I think, is as much in the medical field a symbol of what I'm talking about as you are in the science field, and that's so needed in our world today. If you could bottle that, or if you could write your autobiography and let people know how you think, not that, you know, it would be hard to express, I suppose, for your person, but how did you get to be this way? You're very rare, and I think it's wonderful that you convey that to all the people in your classes and your audience.
Hmm.
So thank you very much for being just the way you expressed your joy in being a citizen. This is something we need to have more of. And you are, for teachers, what Dr. Sacks is for medical doctors. And thank you very much for being you.
Oh,
thank you, Judy. I'm speechless. As soon as we get off the air, I'm going to call Oliver. He's a good friend of mine. and tell him what just happened here. Oliver Sacks is another example of what I call a scientist citizen. Carl Sagan was a scientist citizen. Richard Feynman was a scientist citizen. Oliver Sacks is a scientist citizen. And I thank you so much, Judy, for your comments and for your encouragement. And I assure you, I will continue to try my best to live up to the expectations that you have just stated about me. Thank you so much.
Oh, God, you're welcome. Say hello to Oliver for me. I love both of you.
Thank you, Judy. Thanks very much. Wonderful comments. Robert in Madison, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I'm compelled to call because Professor Shakashiri taught me freshman chemistry at the UW 41 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
And in no small way, helped shape my career. I've worked in public health, went on to get a PhD. I've worked in Florida. From time to time, I get to do some work up here at the UW-Madison in population health sciences and happen to be here at the moment doing just that. So a great opportunity to say hello again. My question is, I'd like to have him comment on sort of what's happened with the interaction of politics and science, because when we get to issues like toxic chemicals in the environment, climate change, And sometimes the economics of various environmental decisions or non-decisions. Politics has sort of taken over the rule, and to some extent, we don't listen to the scientists. And as someone who's been in the business for a long time, I'd just like to see what your perspective is on that.
Robert, thank you so much. And it's, nothing can be more rewarding to a teacher than to hear from... Excuse me.
From a former student.
From former students. who go on and are successful. Thank you, Robert. So we live in a society where the level of science literacy is low. We need to improve the communications between science and the rest of society. You know, this country, the taxpayers in this country have been very generous in supporting scientific advances through the National Institutes of Health, through the National Science Foundation, Department of Energy, NASA, and so on. All of that has happened because our government and our people, more than our government, our people, developed the will to support science and technology. And your question, Robert, is about this social contract that really exists between science and society. We have an awesome responsibility as scientists, not only to make new discoveries, you know, we enjoy doing that, but we have an awesome responsibility to pay back to our fellow citizens so that we live up to the social contract that science and society have. This is one small aspect of a very long talk, speech, that I give about this. And if you go to my website, Robert, scifund.org, near the bottom of the page, you'll find an entry there that says Statements by Bassam. Browse around there, you'll see more elaboration about what I'm talking about here. So, our fellow citizens need us, we need them. That is the essence of the social contract that we have. And we must find effective ways, we, the scientists, must find effective ways to communicate successfully with all segments in our society. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not very well rewarded. Carl Sagan was denied admission to the National Academy of Sciences because he was thought to be a popularizer of science rather than an accomplished astronomer. It was held against him that he was so popular, you know, the Johnny Carson show and so on. So I come back to this social contract, Robert, that we all must live up to. And once again, Robert, thank you for your comments. And what are you doing now in Madison?
Well, I'm actually up here for a couple of Badger football games, but I'm supposed to be working as well.
Enjoy both.
I know I won't leave the room. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. It's a wonderful whole string of very wonderful comments today, and well-deserved. But Sam, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I want to come back to the colors of the leaves.
Oh, yes.
Larry, why do the leaves change color in the fall?
Well, I don't know for sure. I think it's because of the change in sunlight and the change in temperature.
Well, you have some ideas, right? Change in temperature, change in humidity, change in sunlight, and the chlorophyll that's green in colors is in the leaves.
Yeah.
You know, actually, all the other colors are there, but they're masked by the chlorophyll. But when the giant factories that make the chlorophyll slow down because of the factors you just mentioned, and a couple of others too, then the other colors become more apparent. They're beautiful. They're captivating. And you know where you can find more information about the chemistry of fall colors?
I bet at scifund.org.
Scifund.org.
I tell you what, we've got, well, you know, let's take another call here. Doug in Treber, Wisconsin, has a question about salt and water.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Larry. Sure. I like your shows a lot.
Thank you.
Hey, you got hard water, doctor, and all you do is add salt and them little PBs on the bottom, and then out comes soft water, good water. What's going on there?
Well, you have a softener in your house, right? And the softener is charged up with sodium chloride, table salt.
Yep.
And the hardness in the water is due to minerals, including calcium ions and magnesium ions. And what the softener does is pass the water through an exchange column, an ion exchange column, that's what it's called, where the calcium and magnesium ions that are in the hard water are exchanged for the sodium ions that are in the in the exchanger. Yeah. And so this is how the water is softened. That's how you get rid of the hardness in the water. And my question to you, Doug, is why do we want to soften the water?
No, what's the there's like BBs in the bottom.
Yeah, but why is it important that we soften the water? Why do we do all this?
Well, the wife doesn't like having to clean the rust out of the bathtub.
Well, see, that's one reason. Another reason that is that the calcium combines with the carbon dioxide and forms a solid calcium carbonate, a deposit, a white deposit.
Yeah.
Calcium carbonate, magnesium carbonate, these are insoluble substances, and they deposit at the bottom of the hot water heater, and they build up and they clog up the process that we want to enjoy of having clean hot water. So only the hot water is softened. The cold water is not softened. Only the hot water.
Yep, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your calling, Bassam. Thank you so much. Boy, what a wonderful 45 minutes. I was inspired hearing all the wonderful comments about you and your work, and I really appreciate having you come by again.
Thank you, Larry. I'm so humbled. You saw the tears come down my cheeks.
Yeah, I did, and they did. And Bassam Shakashiri, a professor of chemistry and president of the American Chemical Society, has just done a wonderful job. And he'll be back. He'll come back again, I assume.
I'll be back for sure. And Larry, the American Chemical Society is the largest scientific organization in the world. We have over 164,000 members.
Well, good luck with the rest of your year as president as well.
Thank you so much.
Bassam Shakashiri, he'll be back, and we will talk with him again about the world of science and the importance of science education. It's always great fun to have Bassam come by. Coming up next, we're going to focus on the science of healthcare and specifically taking care of our skin. Dermatologist Dr. Dick Niles joins us to talk about back-to-school skincare right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.